This is Jim Yule, author of The 6 Disciplines of Agile Marketing, proven practices for more effective marketing and better business results. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, and thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know, and named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast and I read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. I produce this podcast to help us both keep up with the latest ideas that matter most in the quickly changing and somewhat overwhelming world of modern marketing and sales. My day job is running a marketing agency that helps manufacturers and industrial companies grow faster by taking a sales-based approach to marketing. To learn more about the problems we solve and how we do it, visit salesartillery.com. And if you're one of the many, many listeners who's left a review on Apple Podcasts, I want to drop a little something in the mail to thank you. Details after the interview. All right, enough yakking. Let's get on with the show. Today, we welcome Jim Yule to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about his book, The 6 Disciplines of Agile Marketing, Proven Practices for More Effective Marketing and Better Business Results, published by Wiley. Jim Yule is one of the leading voices on agile marketing. He co-organized the first meeting of agile marketers and co-authored the Agile Marketing Manifesto. Since 2010, Jim's Agile Marketing Consultancy has helped organizations adapt Agile to their marketing practice using his 6 disciplines and 4 shifts approach, which we're going to talk about. And today, his blog, agilemarketing.net, is one of the most trusted sources on Agile. And interesting fact, Jim is a serious, highly trained amateur cook. Jim, congratulations on the 6 disciplines of Agile Marketing, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thanks, Douglas. I'm really glad to be here.
And I should also add one other interesting fact. Interesting to me, of course, is that you are a graduate of Furman University, and you are the second author I've interviewed who is a Furman grad, Gino Church being one of the others. Furman, Go Paladins, founded in 1826. And the reason I'm so obsessed with Furman is that my alma mater, Virginia Military Institute, and Furman are in the same conference. And let me just say that in terms of football, Jim, yes, our last winning season was in the fall of 1981.
I remember us playing VMI every year, and my memory is that it was one of the easier games on the schedule back then.
So. Well, at that time, VMI won a lot. In fact, the fall of 81, they even beat Virginia Tech. But ever since then, losing seasons. But, Jim, it's all part of a long-term strategy to lull our opponents into a false sense of security. So just putting that out there. So also, I should mention that you have worked in marketing and sales, and that you were the CEO of 3 startups, and you've also worked at Microsoft.
I have, yes. So I bring a variety of perspectives to marketing, and I think that's valuable because I think that marketing works with, you know, sales, of course, but really all the other departments of the organization to make things happen. And it really gave me a view of the importance of working together to meet the needs of the customer.
And that is why I have so many books on the Marketing Book Podcast about sales, because I think the more time that marketing people study sales, spend time with the customer, the more effective they're going to be as marketers. And I think some of the folks that have written marketing books who were in sales, it's invaluable.
I couldn't agree more.
Now, I do want to mention one thing about your book, which is really cool. For anyone that buys the book, there is a free book study group with you over 8 Saturdays beginning December 5th. And all they have to do is buy the book and then send you their name and the receipts. And we're going to include a link to that at your episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com, and it's going to link to your website. But tell us a little bit more about that study group.
Yeah, I got the idea actually from another author who wrote a book called Tiny Habits. I'm forgetting his name right now, but I joined his book study group, and I'm going to do sort of the same format that he did, which is I'll talk for half an hour and highlight some aspects of the particular chapters that I ask people to read in preparation for each week's study session. And then I'll answer questions for 30 minutes. And I think it's going to be very valuable both for the audience and selfishly for me, because I'm going to learn a lot. I always learn a lot from talking to people and hearing the kinds of questions that they ask, and they always kind of inspire me to try to do better. So I'm looking forward to it.
Sounds somewhat iterative, Mr. Yule.
It is iterative. It's also, you know, that thing about the best artists don't steal. I can't remember it exactly, but, you know, they take things from other people and transform them. And that's what I'm trying to do here.
That's right. And it just, it makes your blogging even more effective and engaging, I would think.
Yep, there. Exactly.
So if you are a listener, if you're a marketer and you're not using an agile approach, I want to go out on a limb here and say you will be in the future. So would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. You know, roughly every year there's a survey of marketers done by Andrea Freire, who was on your podcast a few weeks ago, and her team. And the last survey, about 40% of marketers today were practicing Agile. And of the 60% that remained, you know, roughly another 40%. So that would put us at, you know, roughly 60% by the end of the year. Marketers will be practicing Agile. So it's quite the thing now. One of the things that I wanted to do in this book is to help those people who were thinking about adopting Agile and give them, I don't think of it as a roadmap because every person's journey is different, but mm-hmm. more a framework for how to think about what are the disciplines that you need to master in Agile. And then also, what are some of the beliefs and behaviors, what I call shifts, that you need to make in the organization in order to make sure that you get the most out of Agile. And so that's what the book's about.
Terrific. Well, the foreword is written by Scott Brinker, who also wrote the foreword to Andrea's book. And it's from his book, Hacking Marketing, on the Marketing Book Podcast a few years ago, that was my really big introduction to this whole concept. And gosh darn it, even then, it made so much sense. there was no refuting it. And I just wanted to quote from the foreword. Scott writes, "It has never been a better time to be a marketer. The explosion of technology over the past 20 years has created myriad ways for us to attract, engage, and delight customers. Thousands of marketing and technology, MarTech, software companies vie to empower us in ever more innovative ways. Social networks and search engines give us virtually unlimited reach. The digital world provides us a palette that holds an infinite variety of views. We apply them with every imaginable brush, knife, and sponge to a canvas as expansive as our collective imagination. And never have we seen greater demand for this power to create. Marketing, once a peripheral function at many companies, the, quote, arts and crafts department, as a colleague once lamented, now sits at the center of the organization. We are the heartbeat of customer experience, delivering customer engagement to the far reaches of the organization and returning rich insights to the management brain. We who master the art, the science, the engineering of modern marketing can have the world at our feet. And yet," he says, "and yet many organizations struggle to harness this awesome creative power that sits seemingly beyond their grasp." And then he goes on to mention something that was quite a visual for me. He says, "The problem is the process. Organizations manage marketing today with the practices and procedures of a bygone century. They yoke six horses to a jet airplane, and they roll across the prairie in a shiny metal Stagecoach. And then he goes on later to say the six disciplines of agile marketing is the new classic of marketing management. So, Jim, for those that are not familiar with it, can you explain or define more about what agile marketing is?
Sure. I have to say something first, though. I love that image, okay? The image
of the airplane?
Of a jet plane, a shiny jet plane being towed by, you know, six horses or whatever. And I think Scott is exactly right. We are trying to manage all of this new technology and all the new tools that we have that should allow us to be great marketers and for this to be the golden age of marketing. But we're managing that with, as he says it, you know, the tools of a bygone era, right? Mm-hmm. So many people are using sort of the standard campaign approach. The software developers called it the waterfall approach. And I think that's a appropriate name because it is essentially a series of things that get done. And it's all flowing in one direction to the end. It's sort of a one and done philosophy. So if you start a campaign, you first put together your campaign strategy, then you write that campaign strategy up in a campaign brief. You give the campaign brief to the creative team. They create something and they're trying to create something that will rise above the noise. And then you run that campaign for months. And then at the end, because you spent millions of dollars and you've taken all that time, you can't possibly say, well, it didn't work. You know, I mean, come on. We're marketers. We tell stories. Okay. So if it didn't do so well, we find, you know, metrics to say, hey, it did well. Right. And we declare victory, right? Mm-hmm. So Agile takes a very different approach. Agile says, hey, let's come up with a little idea or maybe more than one idea. We don't know whether this approach or that approach is going to be better. And instead of just, you know, doing it based on an argument in a room about which is better, let's go out there and actually test it with customers, okay? So let's run a little test and learn what's the best approach promoting this product or positioning this product or whatever we're trying to do in marketing. And then once we get that data, we can then optimize the approach and get it, you know, just running on all cylinders, to use another analogy. And only once we have that running really well through that iteration that we've done, then we start expanding our reach and start expanding our spending. Because we know, because we've tested it and we have the data and the analytics, we know now that it's going to work. And we don't have to worry about finding these metrics, I call them vanity metrics, to make us feel good about, you know, a campaign that didn't do so well.
Can you talk about Agile's development and its roots in software development? That might be helpful for people to understand that rather than shipping a box once a year, there were continuous improvements that could be made.
Yeah. So back in 2001, a group of software developers got together in Utah at a ski resort. And they spent a few days talking about some of the issues that were plaguing software development then, products that were late, you know, the inability to develop software that really met the needs of users and so forth. And they came up with the Agile Software Development Manifesto, right? And it's just four simple values and a set of other practices and methodologies. And those four values revolutionized software development. So you went from delivering software. A long time ago, I was a software developer and we actually delivered a project 3 years after we started, right? That would be unheard of today in the Agile world. In the Agile world, software developers develop new software and deliver it sometimes on weekly cadences. You know, more often they will do it on bi-weekly to quarterly cadences, but they are delivering software in a sort of rapid and iterative way. So a number of marketers, myself, Scott Brinker, others, were very aware of the success that developers had had with this agile methodology. And we thought, you know what? We as marketers could do some of the same things. Okay. So like the first value of agile, as the software developers wrote it, is responding to change over following a plan. Right. Mm. And if you think about that as a marketer, wow, that's a different way of doing things. Instead of writing, as I did at Microsoft, these year-long plans, which honestly, the day after I finished them, I put them in a drawer and never looked at them again.
Okay? Until you cleared out your desk.
Until I cleared out my desk when I left. That's right, exactly. And so instead of doing that, why not, you know, write a little plan, maybe one page, or, you know, I call them napkin plans because you should be able to fit them on a napkin.
And right? I envisioned a cocktail napkin. So
yeah,
what does that
exactly.
tell you?
It tells you they should be small, right? Right. And also, by the way, another thing it tells you is that you probably envisioned something that didn't have a lot of writing on it, but it had something visual on it, right? Mm. So because, you know, we can read visual things much quicker than we read the text on there. And so you put together this plan and then you take it out there and you show it to people and they give you feedback. And based on that, you rip up that napkin and you put another plan out there and you show it to some more people. And you know, pretty soon you've got 10 napkins ripped up and your 11th one is looking pretty good, right? And so it's that kind of attitude where you are developing your plans not on a yearly basis, but you're responding to what's happening out there in the market. If something unexpected happens, like back in, you know, January, February, where we have a pandemic and, you know, your business is suddenly hit by the repercussions of that, well, you're not kept flat-footed. You know, that plan that you wrote in January, look, that's more or less out the window. But you, because you are agile, you know how to respond to that change.
So let me just ask one other question. There's a lot of marketers listening, but it's my sense there are a number of business owners and CEOs and a lot of salespeople. How do they react to agile? Why would they want to read this book or even continue listening?
I think that when they first hear the term agile and they hear agile marketing, their reaction isn't that great, okay? There's something about the terminology or whatever. They think, oh, that's a buzzword, mm-hmm. or that's the latest trend of the marketers. They'll get over it, you know, that sort of thing, okay?
In fact, at the end of the book, when you talk about, you know, introducing this to your company, particularly if management isn't receptive, don't use the word agile.
Exactly. I tell people, cool it on the agile language, okay? Yeah. Don't even call it agile, okay? Just tell them that you are trying to do some new things to manage how you do marketing, and you want to make sure that it's very responsive to the customer and that it's very aligned with their needs, okay? And you go and have a very candid conversation with your salespeople or the CEO or whoever that you're working with, okay? And I think one of the keys to that conversation is to be vulnerable. I've always said that if you want people to be vulnerable with you, you've got to take the first step and be vulnerable with them. And that starts to build some of the trust and transparency. So you can say things like, look, we know we haven't always done everything that you needed. Talk to me about what you need from marketing. Tell me about the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I would put it, okay? And have that candid conversation about what do they need from marketing? What's working today? What isn't working? And, you know, even just asking a question like, what's the number one thing that we could do for you over the next 2 to 4 weeks that would help you in sales or that would help the company if you're talking to the CEO, okay? And get aligned with them on that. I refer to this as radical transparency. And this is something that I learned, quite frankly, from one of my clients in one of the interviews in the book. He talks about how working with the salespeople, and I kind of started it with him when I went there to teach a class, I had salespeople in for lunch and we had one of these candid conversations. And from there, it developed that the salesperson became his biggest supporter within the organization. The salesperson loved what they were doing. Now, I don't know the salesperson would have used the term agile, okay? Who cares? I don't care if they use that term. Right. I care a little, but you know, the most important thing is that they are satisfying the needs of both the customers and the salespeople.
What was it that the salespeople really liked about this approach?
They liked the transparency of it. They liked seeing what marketing was working on. They liked having input into what marketing needed. What sales needed from marketing. Mm-hmm. They liked how things were getting done more quickly. The things that mattered were getting done more quickly. One of the things about agile is it's not about working faster. It's about working smarter. It's mm-hmm. about working to the right set of priorities. If you are sitting down with sales and sales says to you, the number one thing that I need is some better information about our competitors. Okay. And, you know, a week or two later, they provide the best information you've ever seen about the competitors and how to, you know, how to sell in that environment. Well, you're probably going to be happier with that, right? And so that's what they really liked about it was the transparency and the fact that they were listened to about what the priorities should be.
Yes, and you know, a lot of companies struggle, or at least I hear about them struggling with trying to get marketing and sales aligned. And one of the wonderful things about this agile approach is that it's the wrong word, but it sneaks that in.
Well, I don't know about sneaks.
You can't. You're going to have better alignment, and you don't even have to say sales and marketing alignment. But you're gonna get them working together more closely and more as a team. That's right. So that's just one of the many benefits. Now, what I wanted to do was before we get to the six disciplines, I wanted to actually jump towards the latter half of the book to talk about the four big shifts that have to happen in an organization before you can even start to get to those six disciplines. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you to maybe make the listener, the marketing listeners, feel a little bit better, make them feel like they're not taking crazy pills. Just recap the challenges that are facing marketers today that sometimes people forget about.
Yeah, there are so many. One is just the pace of change, you know, and I know that every generation sort of feels this, but I mean, we really have had a tremendous amount of change in the last 10 years. Not only things like the pandemic, but also, you know, the introduction of technology, the degree to which people, for example, use their mobile phones, and how that has become a channel, the way that people use Facebook and now TikTok and you know, there's all kinds of new things that are introduced every year that become important for marketers to take advantage of. A second thing is the shift to digital. I think that that's pretty much, I don't know, it's not done, but it certainly is, you know, 80-90% of the way there. But I don't know that all fully taken advantage of the opportunities of digital and the ability to gather information, the ability to build, as Scott Brinker calls them, the marketing technology stacks or stackies, as he calls them. Mm-hmm. So there's all that technology to learn and deploy and figure out how to use effectively.
It was funny, the other week I was interviewing another author and he was talking about digital transformation. He mentioned this one steel company in Germany and they had recently gone to using email and they thought that was digital transformation.
Yeah, well, you know, people are on different places on their journey.
That's right. But another one that's really so important, and I say that because there seems to be this unawareness or this disbelief about the shift in power to the buyer.
Yeah, that's the next one I was going to talk about. I'm sorry, it's happened, okay? If you look at on the consumer side, okay, one of the best examples is what I call showrooming. So you're in Best Buy and you spend a lot of time in their, you know, brick and mortar store. You've spent time with their salespeople getting educated about whatever it is you want to buy. Let's say it's a printer. And then the last thing you do is you go on your phone and you see who gives me the better price. And if, you know, Amazon, who didn't do any of that selling to you, is $10 less, you might buy it at Amazon rather than buy it there at Best Buy, right? So the power is there. And this isn't just a business-to-consumer issue either. This is B2B as well. I saw a statistic from CEB Global, which now is part of Gartner, and they had done a survey of buyers and found that buyers were 60% of the way through their buying process before they even contacted the company. Right? So 60% of the selling, if you will, or the buying happens before a salesperson even knows these people exist, right? And so some of their preconceptions are going to affect the sale. Some of the things that they've done in terms of talking to other users in your industry. I mean, all that stuff has happened. By the way, that increases and puts additional pressure on marketing because marketing has to create those materials that people see. They need to go out and solicit reviews. They need to go out. I mean, all that stuff. And so there's that also has a great impact on marketers.
Mm.
The shift in power.
Yeah, and there are many others. So marketers, you're not alone. Now let's move on to the four shifts that have to happen. So I've already jumped to the middle of the book, but I
yes,
wanted to do
have.
This first. And I just want to quote from a couple things. You write, as I helped organizations adopt agile marketing, I saw that they needed to do more than master the six disciplines. And we'll touch on those in a few minutes. They needed also to shift their organizational culture, beliefs, and behaviors. Although each organization encountered its own challenges during this cultural transformation, all came down ultimately to a commitment to make these four shifts, from a focus on outputs to a focus on outcomes, from a campaign mentality to a mentality of continuous improvement, from an internal focus to a customer focus, from top-down decision-making to decentralized decision making. And you're right, the four shifts cover each of these shifts and provide some guidance on implementing them. Many people would argue that making the four shifts is more important than mastering the six disciplines. They may be right. And that's why I wanted to jump to this part and wanted to go through, touch on a couple things there, because even if a company isn't ready to start making the shift to agile, even if they just be more mindful of these four shifts, whatever they're doing, they're going to be more effective.
You're right, Douglas. It's interesting. One of my early readers of the book before it was published actually suggested that I change the title and change the order of the book and whatever and make it the four shifts of agile marketing. And I didn't do that. By that point, we were pretty far along and I wasn't sure that was the right thing to do. But
I would agree, because I think people reading it, they want to know what the six disciplines are.
They do.
But then a readership of one, when you then included the four shifts, it was you gave us what we wanted, but then you're managing expectations.
Yes.
And that's really very important. And let's talk about from outputs to outcomes, because just this week, I mean, your book, Mr. Yule, is really in my head now, because I was, you know, small marketing agency, and we talk to prospects all the time. And I spoke to yet another one last week, and they're looking for a lot of output. And I, it was all I could do. And if I were a better salesperson, I'd be able to find the pain or whatever. But I could not, for the life of me, figure out what the company was trying to accomplish or what their revenue goals were or anything.
Right.
They were looking for like marketing with a quote, whatever that is. And you write at chapter 15, which I know this is unfair to the other chapters. It was my favorite chapter.
I'm glad you liked it.
From outputs to outcomes. And this is so important for marketers. Yeah. You write, when I first began practicing Agile, a colleague said to me, I'm impressed by all the work that your team is doing. Is it producing results? Or are we just generating a lot of advertising and content without generating more leads and revenue? In other words, we were focused on the outputs of marketing and not delivering the customer and business outcomes that were the reason for doing all of the work. And then you start the next paragraph with, he had a point.
So, it's a true story.
Yeah. So talk a little bit more about this explanation of outputs to outcomes and how, you know, organizations and marketers can start this conversation and go from this idea of outputs to outcomes.
Well, I think one of the ways to understand this is to put yourself in the customer's shoes, okay? And think of yourself as a customer and the experiences that you've had, right? And one of the things, you know, if you think about yourself as a customer, would you ever say, oh, I need more marketing emails and I need to see more advertisements and I need to have more marketing crap thrown at me, mm-hmm. okay? No one says that, right? No one wants more marketing, okay? However, I do want to buy, you know, this new pan for my cooking, or I want to buy this new camera, you know, for I'm also an amateur photographer and so forth. So, I mean, I do want to buy some things, and that's the outcome that the, you know, the camera company wants to see or whatever. And just think about it this way. I have this one study in that chapter where I talk about a particular financial institution that went from shipping on average 17 emails a month to their customers to shipping just 2 emails a month to the customer. But those 2 were very targeted and very personalized to each customer, to what they were trying to do. As a result, the conversion rate, the number of people who clicked and did something and, you know, actually did transacted some business with them went up, and I don't have it in front of me, but my memory is it went up like 3 or 4 times. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you talk to, you know, as an agency, you might say to them, you know, which would you rather, that I generate 17 emails for you or that I increase, you know, your conversion rate by, you know, 3 or 4 times, right? I think most customers would take the increase in conversion rate. Now, some of them will argue with you and say, I know my business. You don't need to know my business. Just do this. Well, you know, you're not the agency for every single customer, so mm-hmm. that may not work for you. But I think that attitude, that shift from we are, as Scott put it, the arts and crafts department that produces these outputs, to we are a partner in business that are working with sales and all the other departments to generate, you know, new sales, increased revenues, and increased profitability. That is the thing that is going to transform marketing.
Absolutely. And there is a study that was done by the Fornays Group, I believe they're in London, a few years back, and it was perceptions of marketers or perceptions of CMOs by the CEOs in this study. Right. And in the study, only 20% of CMOs were trusted by CEOs, meaning they didn't think that the CMOs understood the financial realities of their companies. Now, that was a scathing indictment. And if you as a marketer start to probe for what are the outcomes, the business outcomes we're looking for, you're going to start to get into that revenue camp. You're going to start to get closer and closer to that 20% of marketers that are trusted by CEOs to know the financial realities of your business.
Yes, absolutely. Now, there's a subtle thing here that we need to pay attention to, and that is that marketing doesn't by itself control or produce the revenues. I mean, unless you're talking about like an online business, you know, completely online business or something like that. But in most businesses, it takes marketing and sales and the product and finance and all the departments work together to produce the outcome for the customer. What marketing can do uniquely is change some of the behaviors that lead to those outcomes, okay? But it's that understanding of the cause and effect. When people do this behavior, we know because we have data that that leads eventually to revenue that allows you to start actually looking at some of those behaviors and start measuring those, because you can say those lead to the outcomes that we want. So I think that's an important distinction for marketers to understand, is it's not just about the revenue. It's also about the customer behaviors that lead to revenue.
Yes. And let me add to that, because I know the listener, at least the marketers, they're probably accelerating as they're driving now because they're thinking, but this is hard. You're very clear about that in your book. You say there's some drawbacks to focusing on outcomes over outputs. I'm not going to read them all, but you mentioned one of them is impacting outcomes and measuring marketing's contribution is hard. No one's saying this isn't hard. And you also write about how choosing the right outcome may be difficult. And also, impacting outcomes takes time. So you're radically candid. You're radically transparent here.
Explaining I try this. To be, Douglas.
Yeah, you're not selling snake oil here. So let's move on to the next one, which I already mentioned, which is from campaigns to continuous improvements. You write, too often campaigns are run as advertising and declared as successful based on vanity metrics. You write that continuous improvement lies at the heart of Agile. Agile requires that we put aside our attempts to ensure that something is perfect before we show it to a client or put it in front of customers. Agile requires that we build something quickly, get feedback through validated learning, which we're going to talk about, and then have another go at it, continuous improvement. So explain how companies can start to introduce this idea of going from this campaign mentality to continuous improvement. And just one example I see is that, like, if you're building a website for a company, it's almost as if a client or the business you're working for is thinking that you're printing annual reports where everything has to be perfect before it goes to the printer, when actually it's very different.
It is very different, okay? Websites should not be brochures or not be annual reports, as you put it, right? I mean, that's not the right kind of website. You want a website that is going to be engaging to users, okay? And how do you know whether a website is engaging to users? Well, the only way you know is that you put it in front of some users and see if they engage, okay? And so that requires that you put something out there that you may change, because if they don't engage or they don't engage as much as you'd like, you want to then continually improve that until you're getting the engagement that you'd like to see. Too often, websites are shown to clients and the client says, oh, I like this one versus that one. And maybe they like the colors of this versus that, okay? I don't mean to insult them, but it doesn't really matter what they like. Unless they're going to be the ones buying the product or they're going to be the ones, you know, purchasing the service, it doesn't matter. What we want to do is to make sure that the people who come to our website engage in such a way that it leads to the outcomes that we desire, whether that's selling or whatever it is. Okay. If somebody is going to be developing a new website, I tell them start with one page, right? And take a look at a page that's really important in there and where your engagement is not what you'd like to, and just change that one page. Don't revise the whole website, okay? Just change that one page and see what improvements you can get. If you really don't like the whole thing, start with the home page, okay? And just see if you can, with just the home page, get somebody to stay on that home page a little longer. You know, that's always measured. And then also, you should have some call to action on that homepage and just see, can you get them to click on the call to action, you know, button or whatever it is, okay? And just change that one page. And then you can improve the rest of the website. I mean, you've had it out there for a year, you know, taking a few weeks to make sure that it actually works is not going to hurt anyone.
You know, there was a book on the show about 2 years ago called Making Websites Work by Carl Blanks and Ben Jessen. Great interview, fantastic book. And I remember they're conversion rate optimization experts right. in the UK, but they've been hired by little known companies like Amazon, Netflix, Facebook, and so forth. And one of the things they talk about in their book is that so many companies struggle with is you very likely don't need to redo your website. Just focus on one page. And one of the questions is, what are we hoping to accomplish with this particular page or section? And the other thing that they were so honest about is they said, you know, nobody knows anything until you can test something. Yep. Only so they gave up years ago trying to figure out, you know, what was going to happen. There was this, let's just test it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's a form of selling called long sales forms, you know, they go on forever. Okay. And do all this stuff. And for me, I look at that and say, that can't possibly work. I want somebody to be quick and to the point. Well, most of the data shows that long sales forms actually perform better than short ones. Okay. And you know, I would never guess that, but you know, if it works, it works. And so
the form, meaning it had a lot of fields with questions on it?
No, not that it had a lot of fields with questions, but like there's a financial service called the Motley Fool. Mm-hmm. And if you ever look at any of their promotions, they're long landing pages, essentially. They, you know, you have to page down through them 4 or 5 pages. They have videos, they have testimonials, they have, I mean, there's a lot in there, okay? And I would think those would not convert, but they actually convert very well. You know, another example is just color. Why does red work better than blue in certain situations? I have no idea, okay? But if a red button works better than a blue button, I'm going with the red button, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So let's go to the next one, which is from internal focus to customer focus. Now, Jim, it seems like there's a lot of lip service being paid by companies saying, "Oh yeah, we're customer focused," and I don't think they are.
Yeah.
And the thing that this is probably my second favorite chapter is this focus on the customer, because the companies that better understand their customers than the competition does just always seem to win. And you don't have to completely understand it, but you just have to have a little bit better understanding. But this is yet another, you remember how I mentioned that you sneak in sales and marketing alignment with an agile approach?
Yes.
This approach sneaks in a customer focus, whether they realize it or not, and it's going to make them more successful. What are the ways that, or how is it that you are able to anchor the customer into the agile approach? And what are some of the ways that companies can do this?
Well, you're absolutely right that no one ever says, "Oh, I'm not customer focused." Everyone says that they are, but for the most part, it's happy talk, as I like to put it, right? In order to be really customer focused, you have to do several things. First of all, there are some techniques in Agile that help you be customer focused. One of the techniques is the writing of what we call user stories. User stories are basically the user's perspective as a particular user. And you don't make it very general. You want to get very specific, you know, as someone who's owned iPhones for years, and am quite happy with my existing iPhone, why would I upgrade to the newest one? Is the sort of thing that you're getting at? Okay,
well, that sounded like a customer.
Well, it did. I mean, you know, I was just picking one from my own experience.
Yeah. Okay?
But you don't want to pick one from your own experience, by the way. So that gets to a second thing is the only way to be customer focused is to actually spend a lot of time with customers. Okay. And I say a lot. You don't have to spend 50% of your time with customers. If you get out there and spend 10 to 20% of your time actually with customers, and of course, now with the pandemic, I don't mean face to face, but you know, in phone calls, in video calls, whatever you're doing and talking to customers, you are going to learn so much so quickly by doing that. So another thing that people should be doing is voice of the customer. And this is a function that is done by many of the best marketing organizations, but it's not universally done at this point. And you want to have marketing who they provide to the rest of the organization. Here's what I'm hearing from customers. Here's what customers tell me. And they provide it in both a quantitative and a qualitative way. It helps to have the numbers, but it also helps to have those statements by customers. I love it when they play a little video showing a customer saying a particular thing. That can be very, you know, impactful to the people who are building products or providing the service to the customer.
It's so true. It's very arresting. And back when our firm did a lot of advertising, I can remember we had this one law firm client, personal injury law firm. They had to do a lot of television advertising, and we would go out on the street and interviewed people about what their perceptions were and just simple questions, but these were just customers. When we would show those videos to those attorneys, Jim, that was the only time those attorneys were silent.
Right.
The rest of the time you couldn't get them to stop talking, but they were, right. And it's so helpful. I hear from so many marketers that do this, and I know this. So when you start to represent the voice of the customer at your organization, you really, your stature rises, and I've heard from listeners who've done that. Also, it's funny you say, and the marketing is the voice of the customer. You have a number of different ways that this can be done, very complete. But the very first one is subtitled "Get out of the building." I love it. I love it.
Yeah, and I can't take credit for that. That's from Steve Blank.
That's right.
Steve Blank. Yeah, he says there are no facts in the building, so get out of the building. You know, he's great.
Yeah, you're right. Marketers too often have strong opinions about quote what our customers want, having had no conversations to support that assertion. Oh my goodness. And of course, I have to mention, you talk about using buyer personas, and you're warming the cockles of my heart, and I'm agreeing. And then you mention one of my favorite books, Adele Rovella's Buyer Personas. So
yes, that's a great book.
That's one of my favorite books, and I recommend it all the time. So yeah. Let's go to the last one, which for me, it seemed like the most difficult, and that is going from top down to decentralized decision making. In other words, This just seemed like a bridge too far. explain what has to happen or what the pitfalls are that prevent this from getting into Agile.
Yeah, it probably is the hardest of the four shifts. There's no question about it. But, you know, for many managers, and I certainly had this happen to me early in my career as I was a manager and a leader, your day never ends, right? I mean, you're trying to make all of the decisions and you're trying to make sure everything happens. And, you know, you end up working very long hours. You don't see your family. You don't go home for Thanksgiving, whatever it is, sort of thing. And, you know, that's not healthy. That's not a good thing. What managers need to do is to figure out what are the decisions where my unique competence and my unique background is something that says I have to make that decision. Okay. And you have to be really honest with yourself, because there are lots of other decisions where you might say, well, I'm the best person to make that decision. Well, no. Okay. What you need to do is you need to train people who work for you to make decisions. Okay. Because after a while, if you really set the expectations of of here's what I'm looking for in terms of, you know, what a good decision looks like. So that's clarity. And then you train them in terms of whatever needs to be done. That's competence. Okay. And this all comes from David Marquet's book, Turn the Ship Around. It was another great book. If you do that, then they are probably going to make better decisions than you would because they're closer to the customer. They're closer to what's really going on. So push those decisions down. And, you know, I really chose the word decentralized very carefully because here's an analogy. It's almost like the body, okay? If you think about if you put your hand on a hot stove, okay, and imagine that every decision had to be made by the cortex of your brain. Well, your hand would get burned, okay? Instead, what really happens in your body is that the autonomous nervous system causes you to pull back from that hot thing before it even gets to the brain.
Thank goodness,
right? We need organizations that act like that, okay? Think about the Navy, for example, and all the issues that they've had with ships running into each other and the fire on the ship on the West Coast and all that sort of stuff. I guarantee you the sailors who were on deck before those ships crashed, they knew it was going to happen long before somebody contacted the captain, okay? What if they could do something about it and do something about it quickly?
It's funny you mentioned that because as I was reading this as a student of great interest of military history, it reminded me of armies throughout history where when they've been able to push down decision makings to the unit level, they're generally more effective rather than trying to control it all from the very top.
Yes.
So let's go on to the six disciplines. Now that we've teased this for the listener, that's what they dialed in for. So let's just go through those now. The six disciplines are alignment, structure, process management, validated learning, adapting to change, and creating remarkable customer experiences. So let's talk about alignment. And you're right, if agile marketing helps marketers be more efficient and get more done, alignment ensures that they are getting the right things done, things aligned with the needs of the customer and the goals of the business. Alignment is the first discipline to master. Without it, nothing else works. And then, Jim, I have to quote from page 37, and I say that because I took a picture of this and posted it on LinkedIn. And I did it on a Sunday, and off to the side, I wrote, "Can I get an amen?" Okay? A complaint often made by the CEO to the CMO is that marketing does not speak the language of business. The CEO cares about increased revenue, lowered costs, and improved profitability. Marketing talks brand, PR, and vanity metrics. If collaboration is about working well with others, alignment is about ensuring that marketing is contributing to the goals and objectives of the business while ensuring that the business is aligned with the needs of the customer. What works and doesn't work as it relates to trying to get some alignment?
Yeah, I put that in there as the first discipline because many people start in the wrong place. They start with process, right? They start by going out and getting training in Scrum, for example.
Or buying the software first.
Or buying the software first, right? Or whatever it is, right? Figuring out what tool they're going to use. The most important thing is to get that alignment. And I think of alignment along three dimensions, okay? The first is alignment within the marketing team. Why are we adopting this agile stuff anyway? What are we hoping to accomplish? Okay. What do we want to keep about what we do now and make sure those things don't get lost? And by the way, how are we going to measure whether this is really working or not? If you can't get everybody on the same page with the answers to those questions, don't even go anywhere else. Get back and get the answers to those four questions. Okay. So that's the first area to get alignment within the marketing team on those four questions. The second area is to get alignment with the other parts of a business. You know, go to the sales team and say, you know, how's marketing doing? What can we do for you? What do you need from us? What's the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I said earlier? Mm-hmm. Get alignment with the most senior executive you can get to, whether, you know, be a CEO or, you know, whoever, okay? And make sure that what you are doing is aligned with their goals. They're going to tell you, I mean, there's this principle, what's in it for me, right? Everybody is willing to talk about it as long as it's clear what's in it for me, right? And so if you talk to them about what's in it for them, instead of going in and saying, hey, I want to do this agile thing and I'm going to run sprints and hold daily stand-ups and whatever. Forget having that conversation.
Please right? Don't do that.
No, don't do that. Say, look, we want to make sure that we are aligned with what, you know, you're trying to do. So tell me about, you know, your major objectives, okay? Let me do a sidecar here, which is occasionally I'll talk to marketing people and they'll say, you know, management's not very clear about the objectives. Okay. And I say, really? Have you gone and talked to them? Yeah, we did. And we didn't get anything. Well, all right. If you're not clear about the objectives, there are some simple things you can do. Number one, make it easier to do business with you as an organization. Okay. Reduce the friction to doing business. That's a good thing. I guarantee you there is not a business in the world that doesn't have friction or things that cause people to not do business with that organization. All right. Figure out what those things are and fix them. All right. Management will love it. I don't care if they told you that was one of their objectives or not. It should be for every single business. Okay. So anyways, if you don't have some specific things from management. So go get that alignment with sales and with management. And then the third area is to make sure you're aligned on the customer. And like I said before, to be really customer focused, you got to get out there and you got to talk to them. But make sure that you as a marketing group, that everybody is on the same page about who are our primary customers, getting back to the personas that we talked about earlier. What do they want? What are their primary wants and needs? What do they like about what we do? What do they not like about what we do? Just get some consistency and
find the friction in their life.
Find the friction in their life, right. Find the friction in their life and reduce some of it. That'd be a simple thing to do.
Well, let's go on to the next one, structure. And you say that arose out of your conviction that most marketing organizations, particularly those in medium to large companies, are poorly structured to get the desired results. What are the challenges of the typical marketing organization now? And again, the six horses pulling a jet across the prairie come to mind.
Right. So most marketing organizations today are aligned on skill sets, right? So you'll have people who are very good at strategy and they'll be in a marketing strategy group. You'll have people who are very good at using the Adobe tools and design and you know, the artistic side of what we do, and they'll be in the creative group. You'll have other people who are very good at building, you know, web landing pages and websites and so forth. And they'll be in the web development group. You'll have other people who are very good at testing and data and analytics, and they'll be in that group, okay? But look, that's not aligned on anything that the customer wants or the value that we want to produce as an organization. And so I suggest that people organize in cross-functional teams. And I think cross-functional teams are one of the superpowers of Agile. I really do. Mm. It doesn't mean that they should reorganize the whole company in cross-functional teams tomorrow. I recommend starting small, one, at most two cross-functional teams. And you can have these cross-functional teams aligned on a particular business objective. You could have it aligned by a new business that you're getting into. You could align it on a stage in customer buying journey. Mm-hmm. You could have it aligned on sort of the sales funnel and different aspects of the sales funnel. There are a variety of ways to organize these teams. But each team should have people with the skill sets necessary to do everything they need to do on that team and dedicated to that team. It can't be a part-time sort of thing. Now, there are some things, like if you need legal approval, you're not going to have a lawyer on every team. Okay, so you'll have some services that will still be outside the team. But for example, you should have a strategy person, a creative person, a web development person, and a testing and analytics person on just about every team. Okay. So that if they have that, then they can focus on getting that business objective or, you know, that new business off the ground or whatever it is that they're trying to do. And they don't have any other priorities. It starts to focus them on those outcomes. Okay. They're not a, they're not an arts and crafts department where they get requests coming in and they produce arts and crafts out. You know, it's not that kind of thing. They're not a content shop or a content factory, for example.
It seems to infuse a lot more purpose. And I'm wondering if the morale of people who join cross-functional teams improves.
It absolutely improves. Their morale improves and their creativity improves. And there are several reasons for that. One thing is that if you're on a team with somebody who has a different skill set, number one, you start to develop some empathy for what's hard about their particular skill. Well, like, why does it take so long sometimes to develop this web page? Well, you know, watch somebody who's on your team do it and you realize, oh man, there's a lot more to it than I thought, okay, in doing that. A second thing is that people with different skill sets, they bring different points of view and different skills to a decision. You know, if you're working a strategy and the web guy knows that he's seen this before and he's developed a bunch of web pages before that kind of did this same thing and they didn't work. Well, he can bring that up at the time and he can explain why they didn't work and what they did instead, right? Rather than waiting until the strategy is cooked and baked and done and finished and passed on, he is in that discussion where you are talking about the strategy. And because you get these different skill sets and different backgrounds and so forth, all in the same room, you increase the creativity and the trust.
Well, let's go to the next one, which is process management. And you explained that that's the application of methodologies like Scrum and Kanban to the practice of marketing. And mastering this discipline helps reduce the chaos and allows teams to get more done while improving communication, both within the marketing team and to the customer and to other parts of the business. So let's do a few definitions here, if you would. Can you walk us through what is Scrum? What is Kanban? Because that'll be new to some listeners.
Yeah, sure. And so Scrum is a methodology that was developed by the software developers to develop software essentially in chunks, is the way I think about it, okay? You get work done in 1, 2, or 4 week time frames, and you have a certain amount of work that you can get done in that, you know, so let's just pick 2 weeks, as that's a very typical one. So you get that work done, and everyone has sort of a goal to get that amount of work done in that week, and they focus to get that done. So it makes it more predictable to get it done. And also, there are different, they call them ceremonies, but different meetings, I suppose, is the way you would call them in Scrum. So there's the sprint planning session where you plan, what are we going to get done during the next 2 weeks? The 2 week period is called the sprint, by the way. Then you have the daily stand up. So you get together for 15 minutes with everybody standing so that this meeting doesn't go on and on. All right. And
brilliant.
Everybody just answers three questions. What did I do yesterday? What am I going to do today? And what's blocking me from getting my work done? Okay. You don't necessarily answer that third question, by the way. In fact, you don't in the meeting. That gets answered offline and at a different time. But you know, if you're meeting with, you know, the six other people in your team, you know, okay, here's what each of them is working on and here's what's blocking them. It's a great way to communicate and to make sure work is getting done. Then you have something called the sprint review. The sprint review is where you show the work that you got done to the customer, to the client if you're an agency, you know, to the salespeople, if you're doing some stuff with the salespeople.
And the customer, Jim, could be an internal customer, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely could be an internal customer. Okay. So you show it to them, you get the feedback, and then you iterate on that. Okay. And then there's one more ceremony. It's called the Sprint Retrospective. The retrospective is where you look back and you say, what's working about this methodology that we've been applying? We've been applying Agile here. What's working about it? What's not working about it? And do we want to change it a little bit? So when we talk about iteration, we're not just talking about iteration on the work. We're also talking about iteration on how we do the work, because we want to improve that over time as well. Mm-hmm. So that's what the retrospective is about. Okay, so that's Scrum. All right. Kanban or Kanban, people pronounce it different ways. Rather than delivering work in sprints, which happen every week or 2 weeks or so forth, Kanban is very flow-based, okay? It's the continuous delivery of work. And the emphasis is on that flow and maximizing the flow and getting things done, okay? There's a very strong influence on that. Kanban is very useful for teams that don't control their work. They can't plan their work 2 weeks in advance. For example, creative teams, right? They get a request for a creative. It needs to get done quickly. And so you want to just flow that work through and get it done. So some other things about Kanban. Kanban uses a board. You've heard this Kanban board. Well, that's a visual representation of the work to be done. And the reason that it's visual is that we process visual information 60,000 times faster than we process written information, right? Mm-hmm. I can look at a board, and if it has a big red stop sign on one of the items up there, that attracts my eye, and I immediately know that item is blocked. Okay. That's just an example of a visual indicator on there. Or I can see, you know, these things are almost done. Let's focus on those things and get them done. Okay. So move them to the right on the Kanban board. They're also one of the key concepts in Kanban is work in process limits. You know, we as humans, we don't multitask very well. I know lots of people who say they do. They don't. Okay. And so WIP limits essentially recognize that. And they say, you know, you can have a WIP limit on a particular column of the Kanban board. You can have a WIP limit on particular individuals. You can have a WIP limit on teams. Okay. Let's just take the one on individuals. Maybe you have a limit of, I can only work on two things at a time. Okay. I primarily work on one thing. Then I send that to be, you know, approved or inspected or whatever sort of thing. And I start work on a second, but I can't do a third until that first one gets approved. Okay. And that tends to force what could be a bottleneck, the approval bottleneck, okay, it tends to force that gets fixed so that things get looked at and improved and inspected quickly so that the work can get done and nobody is slowed down.
Well, why do marketing teams who are new to Agile tend to start with Kanban or perhaps you recommend that rather than Scrum?
They do because Kanban requires the least amount of change from the way things are. You know, one of the principles is, you know, work from where you are and evolve. Okay. You don't have to have new titles. There's no such thing as a scrum master or product owner or any of these new titles that people have to have or positions that you have to have. You start with where you are. You have an existing process for what you do. I mean, whether you call it that or not, you have some kind of process. And so with Kanban, you're essentially going to take a look at that process and evolve it so that it works better. And for many people, that's a good place to start because, I mean, let's face it, people naturally resist change, okay? And they're more likely to accept something that is evolutionary, you know, small changes at a time, than something that is disruptive and revolutionary, which in some ways Scrum requires.
Yeah, and it just seems to, I'm thinking that people understand Kanban more quickly, and it just it does seem less threatening. Let's go on to the next one, validated learning, and that's where learning, because marketing requires that we learn how to satisfy customer needs and wants, validated, because we validate that we have in fact learned this, not through opinion, guesses, and wishful thinking, but through testing and data analysis. I'd like to subtitle this discipline, Iterate Faster. Marketing organizations that iterate faster and learn faster are the most likely to succeed. And so the listener knows, you studied English at Furman, and you started this chapter with a quote often attributed to Mark Twain, which I love. You're right. It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so.
I love that quote. I was looking at it yesterday, as a matter of fact. Someone recently called validated learning grown-up growth hacking. Okay, I don't know if you remember this, but a couple years ago, growth hacking was all the rage. And I sort of liked the idea, but I never quite cottoned on to the term, okay? And part of that was that, well, we're not always just trying to produce growth. Sometimes we're trying to increase profitability. That's kind of a picayune sort of thing. But the bigger thing was that I never thought of it as hacking in the sense that it's some trick to get full customers into, you know, being a customer or something. Come on, we don't do that, right? And so I preferred the term validated learning for just the reasons that you read there, okay? A lot of times we have assumptions about our, what I would think of as our marketing model, right? So we have assumptions. This is our value proposition to the customer. Well, is it really? Have you checked and talked to a lot of customers and that actually is the thing that they value as they buy your product? Let's make sure that's true, okay?
Prove it.
Prove it. Let's go get some data and let's go get some customer information and make sure that that's true. You know, and there's all kinds of other assumptions that we make, and I want to get away from those assumptions and start validating them or testing them. There's another thing that you mentioned, which I think is very important, and that is the tempo at which we test things. If you're testing, you know, maybe running one test every 2 to 4 weeks, okay, you're not testing enough. There was a not a study, but it was a conversation that was held at one of the Agile marketing meetups in San Francisco. And Satya Patel, I believe is his name. Anyways, I'm forgetting if that's the, I hope I got his name right. Anyways, he came in, he was the CMO of Twitter. And he talked about when he came in, they were only running a test every 2 weeks. And he said to them, okay, I want you to run at least 2 tests a week and figure out how to run 2 tests a week, okay, because you're not testing enough. And then after they figured out how to run 2 tests a week, he said, I want you to run 5 tests a week. And then after they figured out 5, he said, I want you to run 10 tests a week and so forth. So he gave them very specific goals. And what they saw is that as they increased the tempo of their testing, they learned more, and their acquisition of active Twitter users went up dramatically, okay? So if you learn more about your customers, you're going to be able to better serve them, and that is going to result in better business outcomes. I'm firmly convinced of that.
Yes, and to add to that, you mentioned that companies should focus on many small experiments over a few large bets. And I had to wonder if that's exactly what the folks at Twitter were doing. They were just looking at the really big things and not examining the smaller things.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't asked them about that. But I do think you have to run some small experiments. You know, one of the things I talk about in the book is the 70-20-10 rule. Right? Spend 70% of your budget on the bread and butter things that you know that work, that they've worked for you for some time. And those keep the lights on. They make sure you're going to make your revenue numbers and so forth, right? Then spend 20% of your budget and fully 25% of your time on sort of improving those things that work, right? So try little experiments to your broad audience of how can you optimize those things that you're doing today and make them better, right? If you get a 10% improvement on your sales, that's a big deal, right? So do that optimization. And then spend 10% of your budget and fully 25% of your time on these small experiments. Probably 6-7 out of 10 will fail, but the ones that work, those are the ones that are going to be your future. They're going to be the 70 and 20 of your future marketing. And they're the things that are going to take your marketing to the next level. So you do those little experiments, maybe not to your whole audience, but to a small subset of your audience or whatever it is. And that's where the innovation comes in. And there's innovation in marketing, just like there's innovation in products.
Amen. So let's talk about the next one, which is we're past Halloween, but it's really scary. It's called adapting to change.
Yes.
And you talk about how adapting to change entails more than simply deploying agile methodologies and building a culture of validated learning. You write that you saw certain activities, including planning for the unthinkable, had to happen before marketers and their companies could best adapt to change. So, Jim Uhl, how does adapting to change fly in the face of 3, 4, or 5-year plans? the ones that are collecting dust, like the one you described that was in your desk until you left that office. How does that fly in the face of or even annual plans?
Well, it does. I mean, if you had an annual plan at the beginning of 2020,
how's that working out for you?
How's that working out for you, right? I mean, I interview somebody in the book. I was just finishing the book as the pandemic hit. And I interviewed one of my clients in Salt Lake City. And they're an in-house media agency for the largest NBC affiliate in Salt Lake. And they have many web properties and so forth. And I had trained them maybe a year earlier in Agile. And he said, thank God we adopted it when we did. Because what we used to do is we would buy a year's worth of media in advance, right? Well, suddenly our business cratered and with the pandemic. And if we had had a year's worth of inventory for this stuff, we would have been stuck with it, right? So that's just a simple example. But the other thing is that they had become accustomed to change even before the pandemic happened so that they were better able to handle that change that was forced upon them. And they came out with some new products and they went and did some new approaches to customers and so forth. Okay. So they sort of dealing with change is actually a skill. It's a skill that you can develop. And if you are more, I'll call it little A agile, you know, you're more able to adapt and change and do something different. Okay. Then when change comes along, and the next change is not going to be COVID-19. I mean, the next change might be a competitor or it might be some other crisis, or I don't know what it's going to be. None of us know what it's going to be. But if you have developed the skill set of adapting to change, you're going to be in a much better position to handle whatever comes.
Yes. And that was Deseret Digital Media.
That's Deseret Digital Media. Yeah. Justin Schroffer, I believe, is his last name.
Yeah. And that was in the chapter on going from internal focus to customer focus. So it was of great interest to me. Last one is my favorite. Okay. I'm sorry to keep picking favorites here, but creating remarkable customer experiences. Yeah. And here you say you use remarkable, as author Seth Godin uses it, something that is extraordinary and amazing and that people remark upon. We are no longer simply stewards of the brand. We are stewards of the customer experience. Mastery of this discipline, although it does not come easy, can have the largest impact. And then I just wanted to mention this other quote from the chapter. Creating a remarkable customer experience lies at the heart of agile marketing. It is the ultimate outcome. If marketers use agile simply to produce more content, more advertising, more social media shares, more unwanted copy that never gets read, then we've failed. The ultimate test of agile marketing is this: can it be used to create an engaging, differentiated customer experience that draws new customers and engages them powerfully with the brand and in remarkable ways. You also write that too many marketers today see their role as explaining the product rather than creating the experience. And this sixth discipline seems very important. And I want to urge, based on having read the book, I want to urge marketers not to wait until someone tells you to become a steward. This is where, for me, the marketing leadership can really come through.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I think you're absolutely right. So there's a couple of things that I'd say there. First of all, is that I think people buy experiences these days. They're not buying products. They're not buying services. I mean, think about Apple and how successful they have been, right? And why do fanboys buy Apple? It's not because they're the greatest products. It's, you know, and they have the greatest service. I mean, they have great products and great service, you know, don't get me wrong, but it's also because of the, all the aspects of the experience from their stores and when you go in and how they greet you and how they work with you and, the Genius Bar and all those things that, that they do there to even when you open up an Apple product, it's different than any other product out there. Just the physicality of opening up, that new phone, is just incredible. So they really focus on the totality of that customer experience, which gets me to my second point, which is we don't want Agile to be introduced into marketing and be yet another silo. One of the ways in which marketers can get respect from the rest of the organization and really engage with the rest of the organization is by focusing on these remarkable customer experiences, because you can't create a remarkable customer experience unless you work with other parts of the organization. You're going to have to work with the product team. You're going to have to work with the finance organization. You're going to have to work with the service organization that answers the calls and takes care of the customers. And when you do that in such a way that you respect their skills, but they also respect yours to make sure that you add that little marketing magic in there, those marketing stories, the things that make people want to talk to other people about it, remark upon that experience, then you've got something very cool.
Oh, so true. And when we talk about creating experiences, I can't resist. I have to quote Maya Angelou. She wasn't talking about this specifically, but it so strongly applies. She wrote, "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel."
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's truth.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask about the future of Agile marketing. And I'm going to ask that question by reading a question. What is the future of Agile marketing? What will it take to move Agile marketing further into the mainstream to where it becomes the dominant approach to marketing, just as it has become the dominant approach to software development? And I ask that, Jim, because at the beginning I said, you know, if you're working in marketing and you're not using Agile, you probably will. Do you think in the future the word Agile might just start to go away and this becomes the the basic operating system for a marketing organization? In other words, you hear the term content marketing, but I'm wondering if the word content is going to go away because it's going to become so baked into the process of marketing.
I think that's very possible. And I'd love to see that happen. To answer your question about what it's going to take, When I first became a marketer, someone gave me a copy of Crossing the Chasm by Geoffrey Moore. I don't know if you know that book, right?
Yeah.
And he has this concept of if something is going to cross the chasm and go beyond the early adopters and get into the mainstream, you have to have this complete product, okay? I call it the complete product donut. He doesn't call it that, but the visual is that you've got whatever product or service that you offer. Let's just say you've got Agile marketing. But in order for a customer to have a complete solution, they need other things, which he kind of puts around that central circle, in order to have a complete solution. So for example, for Agile marketing, we need certification. right? And we knew that, and we met 2 years ago to talk about what was needed for the future of agile marketing. And we went out and worked with an organization to create certification. So that's good. We might need more than one certification, but I don't know. We've got certification there. Another thing is we need agile coaches who are specific to marketing. You don't want an agile coach who is really great at software development. I mean, you know, they wouldn't want a coach who only had a marketing background. And, you know, we don't either. You need somebody who they understand marketing deeply. They can translate, you know, your marketing concepts and how you do marketing today into the agile world. They speak your language. Okay. So we need more of those coaches. We do not have enough of those today. We need conferences on agile marketing. We need, you know, more books on agile marketing. We need podcasts like yours on agile marketing. There's a long list of things that we need to make it mainstream. We need more training on agile marketing. But it's getting that complete solution for the customer. Tools, okay? Many of the tools that are used today were designed, one, pre-Agile, and then even ones that were designed after Agile became a thing, they often are designed for developers, not for marketers. Well, we need marketing-specific, really Agile tools, okay? And we're just starting to get a few of those.
Mm. And we can be confident that Scott Brinker will make sure we know exactly which ones they are.
Yeah, he might show us several thousand, but yes, right. he'll let us know.
Yeah. So, Jim, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
Well, I would hope it would be sort of what's the difference between the six disciplines and the four shifts, okay? And the difference is that the six disciplines are skills that individuals and teams master as they implement Agile in marketing. But the four shifts are the thing that helps the organization get the most out of their shift to Agile. And while they're both important, and I don't want to kind of choose one, it's like choosing one of your children.
Or your favorite chapter.
Yeah, or your favorite chapter. The four shifts are just so critical. And I like the way you put it earlier. I mean, you could almost do the four shifts without doing Agile. I wouldn't recommend it. I think you ought to do both. But, you know, understanding the difference between those two and understanding how important the four shifts are to the success of Agile. One of the things that I want to make sure that people understand is we don't want to just do Agile for Agile's sake, right? We don't want to engage in what I would call Agile theater. Yes, we're holding daily stand-ups. Yes, we're running sprints, and we have no concept of focusing on business outcomes, right? That would be terrible to have that happen.
Like a check-the-box approach. Yeah, we tried that Agile thing.
Yeah, that's right. We did that. Didn't make any difference. We're going to go back to what we did.
Yes. And there was one section I'm trying to find here, which was, again, you know, your book has all kinds of truth here. And it talked about getting a buy-in for your organization for Agile. And you even broke it out and said, here's what's going to happen if management is not receptive. There are some things you can do, but as I can't find the page, but I seem to recall you said update your resume or something.
I did say that.
Yeah.
I said, if management's not receptive, you know, go find somebody who is. And that's probably the easiest thing to do. But, that was a little tongue in cheek, but it's true. It can be very difficult. But what I went on to say is don't call it Agile. Just start doing some things and start getting some outcomes, some results. And only then can you start to say we're going to expand the use of this and so forth. And just don't even use the Agile language. Just say, hey, we're trying some new things, and then get the results. And particularly results that they care about. It goes back to that what's in it for me principle. If you really understand of that manager who is resistant to Agile, what do they care about? What's going to get them excited? And you produce it, they're going to be more receptive.
Amen. Amen. So what is one thing a listener could do today? Just one thing to put in action, one of the many ideas from your book.
Well, I'm going to start with the first discipline, alignment. Okay. Go out and have a candid conversation with your sales equivalent. Okay. And just tell them what you're thinking and why you're thinking about adopting, you know, Agile, and then ask them, what's working for them. Okay. Talk about, you know, what's good, what's not so good, what's most important for them, and start to develop that relationship of trust and radical transparency. If you don't do anything else, just doing that is going to help you improve your marketing.
Oh, that is such great advice. And it seems so simple, but it can have such an enormous impact. Yep. So, Jim, what books have most inspired your work and career?
Well, there are so many. I love reading. I love marketing books. We've talked about a number here, but I'm going to mention a couple that we haven't talked about. So one is an older book. I think it was from the 60s. It's called The 20 Immutable Laws of Marketing by Jack Reese and Al Trout.
Do you know that
book? Yeah. It's one of the best little tiny books about marketing, right?
Their books are very punchy. They're very punchy.
Yeah. And I love that. Okay. So that's one. I already mentioned Crossing the Chasm by Jeffrey Moore. Mm-hmm. Anything by Seth Godin. That man is a genius, okay?
Yes.
I mean, he's particularly a genius at expressing very complex things in an understandable way. I really think he's so good at that, okay?
Let me just add to that. He's remarkable because he will take 300 words to explain something that the rest of us would need 3,000 words.
Yeah. He's so good.
It's amazing.
That.
Yeah. And I just interviewed him recently about his latest book, The Practice, and he just did it again. Just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one more book, The Lean Startup by Eric Ries, was very influential to me. And I was running startups at the time. And then there was also a companion book to Eric's book, which isn't quite as well known, but I think it's great. It's called Running Lean by Ash Maurya. So Lean Startups sort of provided the intellectual framework for the Lean Startup. And then Ash showed, how do you actually do this in a practical and pragmatic way? And I thought that was great.
Interesting. Well, are there any recent or upcoming books that you've heard of or recommend or looking forward to reading?
Well, I noticed that you just interviewed David Meerman Scott on his new book, Standout Virtual Events. And yeah. I read anything that man publishes. I haven't read that particular book yet, but I'm looking forward to it. It's on my nightside table.
Oh, it's terrific. It's terrific. And boy, is that a book that needed to be written right now.
Yeah. David's good at that. He's good at the now.
Yeah. And part of it's that newsjacking DNA that he has. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, at marketingbookpodcast.com, we'll include links to everything linkable to your site and to your LinkedIn profile and all the books that have been mentioned. So I hope that people will reach out to you and connect with you and thank you for being a guest and spending so much time with us going through the book. And for you, dear listener, if you're listening on your smartphone and you subscribe to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app, all these links can be found by going to this episode and clicking on the show notes link. The name of the book is The 6 Disciplines of Agile Marketing, Proven Practices for More Effective Marketing and Better Business Results. The author is Jim Yule. Jim, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, Douglas. I had a great time.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who've left an iTunes review, I would like to return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I will drop it in the mail to you. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, and I read every book featured on this show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.